Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Moto Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
You are listening to continuing coverage of the trial of Chad Daybell from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Let's go back to the courtroom.
All rise. District Court's now in session. Honorable Stephen W. Boyce, judge presiding.
Thank you. Good morning. We've got our jurors lined up, I believe. So if everyone would just remain standing, we'll have them brought in.
All right, please. Here's all present, counter for your honor.
Thank you. Please be seated. All right. Good morning, everyone. We're on the record on case CR 22211623, State of Idaho versus Chad Guy Daybell. This is continuing with the defense case in chief. The court would note the jurors are all present and accounted for, and the court received the declaration that they followed the court's admonishing instruction when we broke for the day yesterday. So I want to thank the jurors again for continuing to follow that instruction from the court. At this time, the court also notes there's a courtroom conduct order in effect for all of those in attendance. And Mr. Pryor, I believe the defense is now ready to call the next witness. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Go ahead and call your witness.
And Judge, may I have the court's permission to approach the podium?
Yes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Judge, the defense would call Patrick Eller.
Very well.
And Judge, while we're waiting for Mr. Eller, I have exhibits 137, 138, and 139, 139 being in a plastic container. My understanding is that the state has no objection to the admission of these exhibits.
All right. The witness is here. Let's go ahead and have the witness sworn, and then we'll take up the matters of the evidence.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you are about to give shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? So help you God.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes. All of them? Yeah.
All right, at this time, I believe as Mr. Eller's being proposed as an expert, I don't think the exclusionary order would apply here in this matter, so I won't do that line of questioning. If you'd like to inquire on direct, you may. Mr. Pryor, I know you've potentially offered some exhibits here. If you'd like to start with those to get them admitted, if they are going to be admitted, we could begin there, or you can begin with direct.
Okay, and Judge, 137 would be Mr. Eller's report. 138 was only for demonstrative purposes. It's part of the cast evidence. That was what Officer Stubbs and Officer Balance had testified to. And then 139, Judge, would be Mr. Eller's video presentation, which I understand the state is, I'll let them speak for themselves, I guess.
All right, let's take those in turn. On the offered first exhibit, 137, it's been offered. And who's going to be conducting cross on this witness?
I will, Your Honor. And I would just inquire of Mr. Pryor if the issue we discussed previously was taken care of in that exhibit. And if it
is, yes, Judge,
then the state does not have any objection to any of those exhibits.
Okay. Exhibit 137, Exhibit 138, and Exhibit 139 are each admitted. You can begin with your direct then, Mr. Pryor.
And Judge, I believe the clerk may have put the wrong tag. Demonstrative one and 139. My 139 would be the audio presentation. So those tags need to be switched.
All right, we'll straighten those out. And Mr. Pryor, if you could pre-mark exhibits, that would be helpful, so the clerks aren't required to do that while they've got their hands full doing other things here during trial, please.
And Judge, I'm going to ask at some point to be using the Elmo device as far as Mr. Eller's report, but with the court's permission, I'd like to proceed with my direct examination.
All right. You can go ahead and get started with direct.
Thank you. Would you state your name, spell your last name for the record for me, please?
Yes, sir. My name is Patrick Eller, E-L-L-E-R.
And may I call you Patrick?
Yes.
We know each other, so you've been retained as an expert in this case. Is that correct?
Yes, I have.
Okay. And Patrick, can you tell me a little bit about what you do for an occupation?
Yes, I am the CEO and principal digital forensic examiner for a company called Metadata Forensics, LLC, which is based out of Richmond, Virginia.
And what type of business is Metadata Forensics engaged in?
So Metadata Forensics is a full-service consulting and training firm that does digital forensics on devices. We do expert testimony, we do training for law enforcement, attorneys, victim advocates. We examine any device that contains data or any data that's turned over to us.
Okay, so it's a broad range of anything that's an electronic or digital of any kind. You, your firm engages in the investigation, discovery, and reporting of what findings you find as a result of being provided that data. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Can you tell me a little bit about your education?
Yes. So I have an undergraduate degree in criminal justice from Troy, and then I have a master's in science and digital forensics from the University of Maryland Global Campus. Outside of that, I have numerous digital forensics training courses and certifications over a 15-year period.
Okay. Can you tell me, and you talked a little bit about the training, can you talk to me about a little bit about your previous experience in terms of government affiliations?
Yes. So I spent 20 years in military law enforcement for the Army. Throughout that time, I served in positions of just a regular police officer, through criminal investigator, through supervisor, supervising general crimes, drug crimes, and then finally computer crimes. When I finished my career with the Army in 2019, I was the command digital forensic examiner over the digital forensics program for the entire U.S. Army criminal investigation program.
Okay. And in terms of education, training of other entities. Can you discuss that a little bit?
Yes. So throughout my career and even currently under my current company, we continue to train attorneys, both civilian and military, and we also still train law enforcement, both military and civilian law enforcement, through the National Forensics Academy, through the United States Army Military Police School, in digital evidence and all types of crimes.
Are there any certifications that you have that you can discuss today?
Yes. So I've been previously certified as a digital forensic examiner and computer crimes investigator through the Defense Cyber Training Academy in Linthicum, Maryland. And then I also have multiple vendor certifications as well.
And if I understand correctly, I can't recall if you previously talked about you running the General Army's entire forensics examination department. Was that discussed?
Yes, that was my final position in the Army. So from the last 7 years that I was in the Army, I helped build out the digital forensics program for the Army Criminal Investigation Division at Quantico. And then we spread it across the globe, building multiple locations out with digital forensic support across the Army.
And then you mentioned the fact that you have educated lawyers, law enforcement, other entities. Are you currently in the business of teaching and educating at this point?
Yes, we do about 25 to 30 classes per year for legal entities and law enforcement entities in the field of digital forensics investigations.
And what about any professional associations?
Yes. So I'm a fellow with the American Academy for Forensic Science in the digital and multimedia section. And the affiliation there is, that's a decade worth of work to get to the status of fellow. I've spent time as the chair of that section. And then I've also was affiliated and have been a previous commissioner for the Forensic Science Education Accreditation. That is the program that accredits the forensic science programs at universities across the country.
And engaging in your profession, does that require any specialized knowledge or understanding?
Yes, it does.
Can you discuss that with me briefly?
So with digital forensics, the use of digital data that the average person uses on a daily basis, I equate it to the best scenario is the iceberg effect. So the part of an iceberg that you would see above the water, the 10% of it, is the amount of data that individuals would typically deal with on a device any given day. The 90% of it below the water that you don't see is the data that we specialize in looking at and getting to attribution. An attribution is just the ability to say what the data actually means or what it doesn't mean or what it shows or what it doesn't show.
So when you use the term metadata, for someone like me, or maybe not even someone like me, someone who's at least somewhat educated in phones and electronics, what does metadata mean?
Metadata is simply data about data. And so as an example, if you have a picture, you see the picture, but the metadata is all the information that made that picture become a picture. Date and timestamps, location data, information about the device that would have created that image, information about if the image has been manipulated, if it's been changed, if it's been filtered, if it's been cropped, has the date been changed, all the information that gets tracked by the operating system when using data is what metadata is.
Now, I'm going to get off the subject a little bit and move towards this concept of the manner in which you can identify certain phones through metadata, and what are the different ways that you can identify either a location or find that a phone is in a particular area, and what sources of information do you use?
So when you talk about locating phones, there are multiple sources. One being the device itself contains location data. The other are cellular providers who maintain certain amounts of data about the transmission of information between the device and the carrier that travels through towers and switches that they maintain. And then there's also metadata that's maintained by all of the applications on the phone, depending on what you choose to share as the settings with that application. There is data that you can request from Google, from Apple, from Meta, from Twitter. All of the individual applications also store data.
And if you were to identify the best source of information to identify the location of a phone, what source would that be?
In my opinion, the best source would be the phone itself. And I understand that there are settings that you can turn on and off with about location data. However, there's data that is still being tracked within the device itself by the operating system in the phone that can be retrieved as well. That comes down to what they call native location data. Native location data is data that's populated on the device that is actually showing where a device would be.
Okay. And then what other sources can you use to identify the location, or at least a close proximity of what the location of a phone is?
So you can use information that is captured by the phone manufacturer or the operating system on the phone, be it iOS for Apple or Google for most of the other devices that are used across.
Okay. Now, an interesting question I have is, what if I have Verizon and another phone has Apple or T-Mobile? Does that change whether you can access it through Google?
It does not change. It just changed what they would store, because it depends on what you're using on the device itself. Okay. So AT&T can have Android phones and Apple phones. Verizon can have Android phones and Apple phones. And so if you have an Android device, you would have some Google information because you're required to have that Gmail address in order to register the device.
So in other words, regardless of whether you, well, I guess I'll rephrase this. So in other words, by just having an Android device, you're required to have a Gmail account. In that sense, Google can track you regardless of through your Gmail account, correct?
Yes. They would have information about you registering the device. They would have information about what services you've enabled, what services you haven't. And then they would have what you're allowing to be stored.
Okay. Now, in terms of disabling a device,
yes,
is it as simple as on my phone as just pulling my phone out and saying settings and turning off location?
So that is one way to turn off information. But the thing with Google is, as far as Google goes, is there's also web and activity information. There are settings within your Google account that you have to change, not just turning off location services on the device itself.
So if someone were even trying to disable their phone, it's more than just flipping to a page and saying disable.
Well, you could just turn the device off.
Okay. Or you do the turn off the location.
Correct.
Okay. Okay. Now, I want to discuss with you, as part of your review, do you recall what documents and pieces of evidence you observed and examined as part of this case?
Yes, there are a lot. I mean, if you're talking about a specific item, because there were a lot of devices, a lot of data that was turned over to be reviewed that was gathered through Google, through Apple, through devices, through other sources.
Okay. Now you, as part of this examination and as part of my office asking you to review this information, did you have an occasion to review some what is called geofence evidence?
Yes, I did.
Talk to me a little bit about, in what would be my term, simpler terms, about what is geofence evidence.
So geofence evidence it's not something that Google intended to even be used in this manner, but the point behind that is geofence allows you to take a location, put a radius around it, and submit a search warrant in order to gain information about devices that would have passed through that geofence or within a certain proximity of that geofence.
Okay. And Judge, before I go any further, I don't have a direct recollection. Did we admit 137, 138, and 139?
We did.
Okay. Thank you, Judge, Your Honor. Now, you had an opportunity to also listen to the testimony of Officer Stubbs. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And then Officer Balance, is that correct?
Yeah, Agent Balance, yes.
Agent Balance?
Yes, that's correct.
And you had an opportunity to examine what their testimony was in terms of what they presented to this jury. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Can you testify about some of the conclusions you drew from listening to their testimony?
So, well,
let's objection, that's overly broad. Yeah.
Let's talk about their location data in terms of their geofence testimony about Alex Cox's phone on, let's say, September 9th.
Okay. Go ahead. What would you like to know about it?
Well, I'd like to know what you took an opportunity to examine the geofence evidence from September 9th and listen to the testimony of Officer Stubbs. Is that correct?
Yes, I did.
Did you find anything of interest in terms of his testimony that caused you to conduct further review?
Yes. So in listening to the testimony about how the geofence was done and what was returned as part of the search warrant from Google and the geofence, I went back and looked at the return data that was given back by Google for the geofence. And I found that there were more devices than what were actually requested to be identified.
And we've previously marked Exhibit 138, and I can put up on the screen and tell me which of these screens we want you to examine. Judge, if I could use the HDMI.
Yes, if you're going to publish.
I'll let you know when I'm ready, Judge.
Which exhibit are you publishing?
138, and not yet, Judge. It's And Judge, if we could at this point, now you recognize this document, is that correct?
Yes.
And that was the document from Sergeant Stubbs, is that correct?
Yes, this was a search and a season search warrant that was submitted to Google to get the device IDs, or excuse me, to provide information about these individual device IDs that were returned from the first part of the Google geofence search warrant that produces anonymous device IDs that are assigned by Google.
Okay, and then if we look under the words, which are right in the middle of the screen, premises, that's addressed to the Google?
Yes, it is.
And then just below that, there's a line that starts with the word 11?
Yes.
And what does that involve?
So there, what's being requested are information about who those device IDs belong to.
Now, I need you to talk a little bit about that, okay? About the concept of device IDs. That ID doesn't necessarily mean it's a phone number, does it?
No, that ID is Google-assigned anonymous numbers that only Google can trace that number back to an individual user.
Would this be properly characterized as a security issue with Google?
I can't say why they do that. But this is why they provide, when you submit the geofence, they provide you a list of these numbers, and then you have to submit a second search warrant like this one in order to get information about who the subscribers were that are linked to those numbers.
So if I understand correctly, and please correct me if I'm wrong, at this point there was a search warrant issued by Detective Stubbs, is that correct?
Yes.
And it was sent to Google, and he identified 11 IDs that he'd like some information on?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And then, and the manner in which he would choose these 11 IDs would be what?
So I can't speak to his exact manner. Based on the testimony that I reviewed, it said that they took all the data and put it in a system and attempted to identify the ones that had commonality.
Okay. And when we talk about commonality, what does that mean?
So commonality would mean that based on the review of my understanding of what they did, was they were trying to show devices that would have been in multiple places.
Okay. Okay, and the information that they're including is described in A, B, C, and D. Is that right?
That is the information they're requesting.
The information, the name, the address, contact, that sort of stuff.
That's correct.
Okay. And then at some point, as we scroll down, there is information provided. And can you talk a little bit about this information?
Yes. So in the far left column where it says device ID, that is the device IDs that we were talking about just a few seconds ago, further up. And then from there, the time and date is date and time of when that device ID would have been seen inside of the radius that they provided for their initial search warrant for the geofence. And then you'd have the latitude and longitude, which would be the location data. The source of that action, or the source of why this was recorded or where it was from, would be Wi-Fi, GPS, and then that map display radius is their margin of error.
Okay. And Judge, does he have a red
laser pointer?
Yes.
I think there is one there.
Okay. And if you really slowly again, because just so making sure that we track us, could I have you go over that again, and starting with the device ID with the laser pointer?
Yes. So the device ID right there explains that anonymous number that is assigned by Google, that only within their records where they store this information are they able to link this back to an individual device.
Okay.
The next column over with the time and date, that is the time and date of this information here, which is the location and the source of that information, and then the margin of error that was recorded for the information here by those devices to be associated with that initial geofence warrant that was submitted for the radius of what they were searching for on that particular day.
So if I understand, we have the device ID on the left, which is under the word location one. The next would be the date. And in this particular screen that Officer Stubbs requested, looks like September 9th of 2019 and at 9:18. Is that correct?
Not, I see 9:19 as the first entry.
19. Oh my goodness, I need my glasses. 9:19. 38, it looks like. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And then when we're talking about the longitude and latitude, do you recall what location Officer Stubbs was interested in?
That would be the Chad Daybell residence.
Okay, and you reviewed this data as part of your review of this case. Is that correct?
Yes, I did.
And you reviewed this information that Officer Stubbs and one of the other officers, Balance, testified to regarding this information as well. Is that correct?
Yes, I did.
Okay, what did you find in terms of your investigation of note in this, in your review?
So in my investigation of looking at this information and going to not just this paper copy of this record, but looking at the actual return that came back from Google that these records were contained in, there was a lot of other devices. And there was devices prior to 9:19 on September 9th, as well as devices within there's more. There's more records that were actually provided than what you would see here.
Okay. So to put this in plain English for me to understand and for everyone else to understand, what this data shows is that these are IDs of phones that are in the proximity of the Chad Daybell property or on the Chad Daybell property on 9-9 of 2019, correct?
They're devices, yes.
They're devices. So this list of things that you have in front of you include all of the device IDs that somehow registered at or near the Chad Daybell property on September 9th.
This does not include all of them. This includes only the ones that they were asking to be identified.
Okay, and we're going to get to that in a minute, but I want to put this in context a little bit. So if depending on the radius, if a phone was either on the Chad Daybell property at any time or was near the Chad Daybell property, depending on the radius, you would get an ID of some sort. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And what is the source of that ID? Where is that ID coming from? How is that ID arriving? Is that through the Google app?
It is through all of the information that Google tracks from a device.
And when they're saying the ID, that could include someone who doesn't turn off their Facebook location. Is that fair?
It could be, yes.
That's someone who doesn't turn off their location on their Gmail. Is that correct?
Yes.
That's someone who could do something with their Twitter or any other app that they have on their phone and they just fail to disengage.
Objection, leading.
Sustained.
Would it be that if there's a failure to disengage any location data on any of the apps that you would get an ID number?
Objection, leading.
Sustained.
Okay. What would be the process of obtaining IDs other than turning off the location device on a phone?
So this information that's being tracked across this, for instance, if you were to connect to a Wi-Fi signal from a device, you would also generate a field within this. And so it's not just the device itself, but what the device is doing and what information Google is populating within their records about what's going on that device.
Okay, so when we look at the numbers that are provided here, these are all a series of numbers.
Yes.
You testified that this wasn't an exhaustive list. What do you mean by that?
So the full list of devices, actually it was returned in spreadsheet format. And when sorted, you would see one by the order of time and date, because you can see here a lot of these are out of time and date. Like, it's not in time date sequence, it's in device ID sequence.
Okay. Did you engage in any attempt to format them in a certain way?
Yes, I did.
And what did that involve?
So I took the spreadsheet that was returned by Google and I filtered the information based on the time and date so that it went in chronological order. And I was able to then identify the device of Alex Cox based on the information that was provided within their reports. And then I was able to take the device IDs that are further up in the pages of this search warrant and identify those in those records as well, commingled with all of the other records that were provided by Google.
So you recall the testimony of Officer Stubbs, is that correct?
Yes, I do.
And there was a representation regarding finding Alex Cox's ID among these searches as one of the pertinent phones located as part of this search warrant. Is that correct?
That's correct.
As part of this search warrant, did you recall any comments or do you recall any testimony as to whether or not there was any ID or information to suggest on 99 Chad Daybell's phone was also part of the location data?
I do not recall hearing that it was. What I recall from the testimony was the results of the Google search.
Objection, non-responsive. Overruled.
Go ahead, officer.
The results of the Google search showed that the only device that they were able to place with the association at the Chad Daybell residence was that of Alex Cox.
And that was at 9-9 of 2019?
That is correct.
So what we're saying is that on 9-9 of 2019, with all of this information from... And again, what was the starting time of this again?
On this particular...
On 9-9, the earliest location information?
I believe it was 9-19.
Okay.
It's at the top, but...
And then this went well through 11:58 or 12 o'clock that day at the very bottom of the screen. Is that right?
Yeah, well, this is not in chronological order, so I can't tell you the exact final time, but it was, yeah, sometime after 12 o'clock.
Third one from the bottom. It looks like I have a... 12:10, is that what
it looks like? Yes, I see that.
Okay. So if I understand your testimony, is that on 9-9 at approximately 9:19 through 12:10, there is no identification data showing that any device owned by Chad Daybell is on his property. Is that correct?
Yes, nothing in the evidence showed that.
Okay. And again, we talked a little bit about the ability to disengage that information and turn off your phone. That's possible, correct?
Yes.
He could have been there and he turned his phone off, right?
Yes.
He could have been there and he turned his location off, correct?
Yes.
He also could have taken the time to disengage each and every one of the apps to make sure there's no location data, correct?
Yes.
Is this an easy task to do?
It's not easy to turn off all of it, other than turning the device itself off.
Okay. 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 Did you have an occasion to do further review in terms of the scope of what you observed in terms of radius on this particular day?
Yes, I did.
And what did that involve?
So what I did was, as part of the filtering of the raw data that was returned by Google, not only did I put it in chronological order, but you'll see... I can point some of the radiuses that were returned or requested to be identified are showing 4,000 meters, 8,000 meters from the radius that was requested as part of the geofence. What I did instead of going that far out is I went and I filtered it down to 10 meters or less throughout this record and identified 19 devices from the Google record on 9-9 that would have been 10 meters or less in margin of error radius. And that's what the record showed, 19 total.
So 19 devices that appear to be within 10 meters or less of a range. Now we need to talk about the area that we're talking about. So when we're describing it, it would be like a box. Would that be correct?
So the way they did it was a single point of reference. They just provided a single latitude and longitude and asked for a 250 meter radius around that.
Okay. And when we're talking 250 meters, if my math is correct, that's 3 feet, approximately 3 feet per meter?
Approximately.
750 feet from a certain point.
Yes.
And where is that certain point on the Daybell property on September 9th? Do you recall?
I don't recall the exact point, but I believe it was in the backyard.
Okay. Okay. And you recall Officer Stubbs' testimony pointing to somewhere in the vicinity of a fire pit or a pet cemetery?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So when we're talking about 250 meters, we're talking about phones that could identify or be in the area within 750 feet on their initial search. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And then you took the liberty of narrowing that down. Is that correct?
Yes, I did.
And the process of narrowing that down, is that a complicated process or is it a matter of moving numbers?
Yes. So it's not complicated. They provide you the data in a spreadsheet format. And so you would turn on the filters and then select the column, and all of the numbers in this column here that show the radius would come up, and you would just deselect all and only select the ones that are less than 10 or less for the number. And then the spreadsheet would readjust and show you only those devices.
So when you're lowering the number, and explain that to me, I don't want to suggest anything to you, and I want to be educated on this. When you're lowering that number, you're drawing a location closer to that fire pit and that fire pit area. Would that be fair?
Yes, it's the margin of error. So that margin of error, the smaller the number, the closer to the radius it would be.
Okay, so when you narrowed the margin of error, and again, what did you narrow it down to?
10 meters or less.
And again, tell me what approximately in feet what 10 meters is.
Approximately 30 feet.
Okay, so approximately 30 feet from the fire pit.
Well, it'd be 30 feet from the radius.
30 feet from the radius. And we don't know, and what would the radius again be?
250 meters.
So 750 feet.
That's correct.
And then within 15 feet beyond that, that would be where the margin of error.
30 feet.
30 feet beyond. 10 meters.
Yes, that's correct.
30 feet. Excuse me. That's why I didn't excel in math or computers. So from the radius, we then have a margin of error of approximately 30 feet beyond the 250 meter radius around Chad Daybell's fire pit. Is that right?
That's correct.
And then what did you find when you narrowed the radius down to include the 30 feet of margin of error?
19 unique devices during that time period.
Okay. And at that point, when you say 19 devices, do you know what the phone numbers of those devices are?
I do not.
Was there a further inquiry by Officer Stubbs regarding that?
Yes, there was.
And how many devices did he pursue of those 19 that were within the Daybell radius of his property?
So according to the testimony, he stated there were 12. The search warrant that is part of this record that you're seeing on the screen says 11. But then he says that he never got an answer from Google until he finally got a hold of someone from Google, and they made him shrink it. So he says they dropped off 2, making it 10 for the return.
Okay. And is that a common thing for Google to do?
So it is common for them to try and shrink your radius on the first search warrant of when they're providing these records. But I have not found it common for them to try to shrink the number of devices that you're asking for identification on that would be within your proximity.
So when Officer Stubbs did this warrant, your testimony is that there were 19 devices within that radius, correct?
Of 10 meters or less.
And then Officer Stubbs elected to pick 11 of those, according to the warrant?
According to the warrant, it says 11, yes.
So he excluded 8 of those. Is that right?
No.
What did he do with the other 8?
Oh, you mean excluded
from his
actual data?
The actual data.
Yes. I don't know. They were not submitted. Those device IDs were not submitted for identification information.
Okay. So at this point, we don't know what the identification, though, but Officer Stubbs identified that they were of not of interest. Do you recall that?
Well, he stated that...
Objection, misstates testimony.
Overruled.
Excuse me.
Go ahead.
What I remember of it is that he stated that the... We're not, based on the commonality, this is what they came to.
And when he's talking about the words commonality, what is he referring to?
The process that they chose to use to try to place the devices in multiple places that were associated with this return.
Okay, so, and the multiple places, do you recall which of those multiple places were?
In this particular return... the data would have been the Chad Daybell residence and the Lori Vallow residence.
So in case there was some commonality in those two residences, the other 8 were excluded on that basis. Is that what you're saying?
I don't know why he chose to exclude them. I just know that they were not submitted as part of this warrant to Google.
So if an odd number of the device that wasn't at Lori Vallow's residence or whoever ticked off at Lori Vallow's residence... Ticked isn't the right word, clicked or identified there. And it was just an odd vehicle that showed up at Chad Daybell's driveway. That would not have commonality. Would that be fair?
I don't know their method that they chose to do the commonality.
Okay. Would this be standard practice to do that?
Objection. Calls for speculation. He doesn't even know the reasoning behind what they did.
It's sustained.
Would in your practice of evaluating evidence... Would that be something, a practice that you would engage in?
No, it's not.
Why would that be?
I would have asked for the identifying information for all of them in order to identify the individuals that would have been within that proximity.
And why would you do that?
As part of investigating the crime.
To determine exactly who was there?
Well, to determine who the information belonged to and what they may know, yes.
Okay, so it's part of expanding the scope of what you're trying to learn about the case. Would that be fair?
That's correct.
So in other words, by ultimately excluding one phone just because it didn't happen to identify at Lori Vallow's residence, but it identified at Chad Daybell's residence, it still could be relevant to this investigation and provide information.
Objection leading.
Sustained.
Would the lack of contact with one of the common... residences potentially still be useful?
It could be.
Okay. Now I want to go above the data that you have. And if you get the pointer out again, if you would help me.
Sure.
At the very top number, I can't read the ID number under the blue, the very top one. You don't need to read it, but that's the first entry that you were provided. Is that correct?
That is not the first entry in the records.
Okay. Oh, the earliest entry would be what?
I would have to look at the record to remember, but it was before 9/19.
Okay. Would it have been helpful to have records earlier in the day for any purpose?
Yes.
And what would the purpose of having earlier requested earlier records than at sometime at around 9 for purposes of evaluation?
You could... also identified devices that would have been there prior to that time.
So if for instance, if Mr. Daybell's device was there prior to 9 o'clock or was identified prior to 9 o'clock, that would have been one of the devices that you would have been able to locate or at least identify?
You would have the device ID and you'd have the ability to submit it to find out subscriber information, yes.
And to your knowledge, that wasn't done?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay. And to your knowledge, again, there was no, based on the testimony of Officer Balance, Agent Balance and Officer Stubbs, there was no identifying information that put Chad Daybell on the property at 9/9/2019. Is that correct?
That is correct.
I'd like to move down to, if we can, I may have the wrong. And Judge, could I just have a moment, please? And
yes.
Just turn the HDMI off and the light on, maybe.
Can I just have a moment, Judge? I'm having some issues.
I can't get this out of the way, and I can't get this other one out. All right, thank you. This is a numbers file, so it's kind of like Excel.
I see what that is.
Deflected a bunch of times. It's going to all be. I just need to be.
Judge, I'm ready. Sorry.
That's fine.
I apologize for the delay. Now, we're looking at the date of 9/23. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And again, if you have the pointer, I can narrow this down again, hopefully. And again, if we can go through the analysis, we have the device ID. And if you would use the pointer and do that for me, if you're able to.
It's right there, that column.
Okay. And then the date would be again, what?
9/23/2019.
And then we have the next would be the longitude, latitude.
The next would be the time.
The time, I'm sorry. And then the longitude or the latitude and then the longitude?
That's correct.
And then the last one would be the radius?
You have the source, which is GPS or Wi-Fi, and then you have the radius.
Okay.
And then the last column is a column that I added.
Okay. So what's the relevance of 9/23 in terms of this investigation? Do you recall?
The relevance?
Would that have been the day that the remains of J.J. Vallow were found on Chad Daybell's property?
Yes, that's correct.
Objection, misstates evidence. That wasn't the day that J.J. Vallow was found there.
No. Yeah, sustain and strike that question. Okay.
In any event, the significance of the 9/23, did you again listen to the testimony of Dave Stubbs and Agent Balance?
Yes, I did.
And this chart represents what?
This chart represents the information that was returned by Google for the geofence warrant based on a location at the Daybell residence for 9/23 during that time period.
Okay. And again, what did you find of significance in this information?
So this is the non-filtered radius version, but in this information here, as with the color-coded, the yellow information, and this is also not time-sorted either, but what I did is it was time-sorted to chronological order, thereby showing the exact process by which those IDs would have been near that radius.
Okay. And the source of that information on your yellow, it says something about Homer at the very right-hand side.
Yes, Homer J. Maximus.
And then in parentheses, you have a name.
Alex Cox.
Okay. And would it suggest then that the yellow highlighted is the source information of Alex Cox's phone on the Daybell property on 9/23/19?
That's the information that's associated with that Gmail, yes.
And then in the green, what does that indicate?
The green indicates that is information, device IDs that were submitted to have requesting information, subscriber information provided back as a return based on this information.
Okay. And again, did you do your analysis in terms of trying to determine whether this is a complete list of all of the phones that had contact at that time?
Yes, I did.
And what did you find?
So this chart should be the complete list.
Okay.
The charts that I placed and provided was the complete chart.
Okay. And what does that mean?
That it has all of the records that would have been provided by Google at that time.
Okay. And as a review of this, was there any further follow-up as to identify these ID numbers to your recollection?
Only the ones in green and also the one in yellow.
Were there other phone records that, for whatever reason, were not included in the search for identification of those ID numbers on that chart?
Not phone numbers, but device
phone
IDs.
Devices.
Device IDs.
Device IDs.
Yes.
And how many of them were there?
On 9/23, I would have to look. If this is the entire chart that I provided, you would look at the white boxes for the unique numbers. You would have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
So there were to be 10 other devices that were not included for information to obtain. Would that be fair?
That's correct.
But there were how many, if you could count for me in the green, that the that they decided to do of for further inquiry?
On this particular day, based on what I'm seeing on the screen, there were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
So if I understand correctly, there were 16 devices that indicated phone location data at or near the Daybell property on the 23rd of September. Is that correct?
Adding in yes, that's correct.
That would include Alex Cox's phone data at that point, correct?
That's correct.
Did at any point you take the task of narrowing the radius to try to I'm not sure what the proper word is, narrowing the radius to maybe exclude others that were not as close?
Yes, and I correct that. Including Alex Cox, it would be 17.
Okay. So again, did you narrow the radius to maybe refine your results?
I did.
What did you find then?
So as you would see within this chart, if you were to remove the numbers that are more than 10, you would see 1, 2, 3, 4.
Okay, so there'd be four devices that once you excluded. And again, the radius that you used to exclude would have been what?
10 meters.
So again, 30 feet from the location point. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And of those four, how many of those within the 10 meters were sent for further identification?
None to my knowledge.
So when you have four phones within the 30 feet of the area set by Officer Stubbs, of those four, they chose not to try to identify those phones. Is that what you're saying?
Objection. That misstates Stubbs' testimony.
Sustained.
Was there any indication that they pursued the identification of the four phones within the 10-meter radius that you just identified?
No.
Is there any indication through the testimony of Officer Stubbs or Balance that any phone device of Chad Daybell was located on that property on 9/23 within the time range you set forth here?
Nothing in the evidence I was provided or reviewed.
Okay. I'd like to, and Judge, I think I'm done with the HDMI, if that's okay.
Okay, we'll unpublish.
And I do need the Elmo on, Judge. You prepared a report in contemplation of testimony in this case. Is that correct?
Yes, I did.
And that was previously marked and accepted as Exhibit 137. Judge, I took the liberty of providing the state with a paper copy. I'd ask permission that I think the state can acknowledge that the paper copy is directly identical to the 137 exhibit that I've submitted and has been accepted by the court.
All right, counsel, I need a sidebar before we get into publishing on that report, please. All right, the court had a sidebar and we discussed Exhibit 137. There are some redactions already in that exhibit. However, there's going to need to be some additional redactions. And so in order to accomplish that before publishing, at this point, we are going to take a recess to allow for redactions on the exhibit. And then once we get those done and redacted, you can continue with your direct and publish the exhibit. It has been admitted, but we'll make those corrections before they're published to the jurors. So we'll take a morning recess at this time in order to accomplish that, and we'll come back on. We'll just let the jurors and the gallery know when we'll be ready to continue.
All right, please.
All right, thank you. We've got our jurors lined up, so please remain standing. We'll have them directed into the courtroom, please.
All right.
Thank you. Please be seated. Okay, we're back on the record on CR 22-211623, State of Idaho versus Chad Guy Daybell, continuing with direct examination of Mr. Eller. The exhibits been taken care of on 137 and admitted. So, Mr. Pryor, if you'd like to continue with your direct, you may.
And Judge, could I have use of the Elmo? May I?
Yes.
And before we start with that, I just want to recap a little bit. You had mentioned that from your review of the devices and the data that was provided, that Chad Daybell's, there was no indication of a phone associated with Chad Daybell was indicated on September 23rd, 2019 and September 9th, 2019 on the Chad Daybell property. Is that correct?
That's correct. No device ID.
Did you happen to look as part of the, and I guess we'll start with this, there was a significant amount of data that was provided to you. Is that correct?
Yes, there was.
And in one instance, there was a sizable amount of data, terabytes, on one particular indication, right?
Yes, I believe it was approximately 10 terabytes.
And 10 terabytes would fill a room about how, what size? Paper to paper.
The way that, you know, we've typically described that is if you were to take the Library of Congress, if it was all printed, just 1 terabyte would fill it.
Okay. So 10 times the Library of Congress is what you were reviewing.
Okay.
As part of your review, did you look at the status of any of the devices of Mr. Daybell in relation to the time of September 9th and September 23rd?
Yes, I looked at the return data for the chad.daybell@gmail.com, the information pertaining to that email account.
Would you be able, through that email account, to determine whether or not Mr. Daybell's account was enabled or not enabled?
I can say yes.
And when you say yes, does that mean that the account was enabled?
So the account itself was enabled, and it lists the services that would have been part of that account.
Okay. And when we use the term that it's enabled, what does that mean?
That means it's active.
Does that mean it's receptive to gathering information?
Yes.
Okay. I'd like to switch gears a little bit and go to the report that you prepared as part of your help in this case with me. Do you recall that report?
Yes, I do.
Judge, if I could have the Elmo again, I'm sorry.
You may.
There's more to come in the trial of Chad Daybell. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage right here from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers Podcast.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Every dating app swipe is another loss. Gym bros, fake CEOs, straight up losers. So now the only app I open is Moto Casino, because at least there I'm surrounded by winners, real winners, thousands of them. While everyone else is in the single swamp, I'm at home relaxing while stacking bonuses, hitting wins, and playing all my favorite Vegas style games. Moto Casino, the only app worth your time.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino. Moto Casino,
America's Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino, America's Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free to play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
John Daly here. You know what day it is?
Neither do I.
I live life daily. That's why I only spend on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto, America's Social Casino.
Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.